Hello and welcome to the Money Marketing Podcast. We are back again for another end of month podcast, and I am back with the editorial team. So I know everyone probably knows you guys by now, but if you want to introduce yourselves.
Michael Climes, acting editor.
Hi, I'm Lois Ballerly, chief reporter.
Hello, Amanda Newman-Smith, feature writer.
Hi, I'm Amanda Newman-Smith, reporter.
Okay, and I think last month I said something about like, oh, hopefully, you know, October is going to be a quieter, calmer month. Uh-huh. And it wasn't. It was not. But before we like get into all the, I don't know, political situations that are currently going on, I want to know about what you guys covered in October. My months are, it's getting to the end of the year and I'm just overwhelmed by months, I guess. But Amanda, could you let us know, because obviously we weren't able to have you in the last podcast, so could you let us know what you worked on in October?
Yes, Kim. First I want to talk about my leader. I did my usual thing. I think, you know, regular readers who've seen my weekend essays will know that I regularly kind of look at stuff that's been going on in my life that isn't related to financial services, and then kind of, you know, draw a parallel with what's going on. But my leader was all about it was a city break in Liverpool, Manchester over the summer. Mm-hmm. And as a family of five, you know, two adults and three kids, we just encountered, you know, being a non-standard needs kind of thing, we just encountered so many difficulties, from, you know, hotel rooms to restaurants. You know, we were turned away from restaurants because we didn't fulfill the usual sort of couples criteria, or, you know, families of up to four. We had sort of hotel rooms where we booked adjoining rooms to keep an eye on the kids, and we got there and then we're told, oh, actually you don't actually have one of them, you know, we've got two rooms that are together, but that will have to do and you're lucky to get that. And all this kind of thing, it just made me think about people with non-standard needs in financial services, because earlier this year I interviewed Jamie Lowe, who is non-binary, and they were talking about the fact that financial services is very binary when you're sort of applying for insurance, for example. I think we talked about like this on a previous podcast, but, you know, the way that everything's kind of geared towards that. And it got me thinking a little bit kind of further on, like thinking, well, you know, this is an easy fix, as we talked about before. But with the cost of living crisis and companies trying to, you know, keep costs down and whatever, it just seems to me that if, you know, you're not part of the majority, then, you know, you sort of have to sit behind everyone else in the queue to wait for these things to be addressed. And I just sort of felt that my situation, trying to just, you know, eat with my kids, it's kind of a little parallel. It was kind of just too difficult, you know, and there's lost revenue if they kind of push tables together, you know, just seating us at a table that you could see eight people at when you've got five. It's just that sort of thing. And it sort of made me think, really, that we could be doing more. And, you know, we're turning people away, we're leaving them to wait. But these people do matter, because they are future sources of revenue. You know, they are customers that you need to protect now, and not just worry about, well, I've got to cut my costs now, and they don't matter because they're not a majority interest. So that was that. Can I also highlight another piece that I did?
Yeah, of course.
This is my financial advisor to be piece, because we all know that, you know, we're all working longer now than we've ever done before, and people are kind of, they're doing semi-retirement, that sort of thing. So for a while I've been thinking, well, if all these people are kind of, you know, in jobs that normally they would vacate and go off to retire, but they're choosing not to, they're quite enjoying it, they need the money or whatever, what does this mean for younger people coming up? And in a news meeting, I was talking to Mike about it, and Mike said, well, you know, what does this mean for financial advisors, you know, new people coming up for that? So that was an area that I'd never thought of exploring before. And I must admit, I came at it thinking that that was how it would be, you know, like financial advisors, if they are choosing to stay on, then that's kind of limiting opportunities for new entrants. But speaking to people was actually surprising, because it, you know, the opposite was the case. You know, it's kind of obvious when you think about it, you know, there's an advisor shortage, going back to the RDR and all that sort of thing, when everyone, you know, decided that they would rather get out of the market than sit exams and whatever. But I was told that actually the future is really bright for people, because there isn't necessarily the case that because an older advisor might be at the top that this does limit opportunities. I mean, it might be the case that you'll end up staying in a role for maybe longer than you'd like. But then people have said to me, you know, there's nothing to stop these younger people branching out on their own. And financial services, financial advice in particular, is a great one to kind of set up your own business in. So that was actually a nice positive thing. You know, we're all experiencing a lot of doom and gloom at the moment. And I thought this is a really good thing. You know, it's a great career for people to come into when they're young. And they don't need to be frightened away by the idea, oh, you know, my boss is sitting at the top. He's not going to retire for like 20 years. There's no need to kind of think like that. So that was a good one, I thought, Kim.
Yeah. First of all, I love the way your brain works, because I would never think about like a personal situation that I am. Well, I mean, I'm hoping that at some point maybe my mind can draw, like it's like a intricate spider web kind of thing where you're like, oh, this is happening, but how does it affect this industry? It's very interesting. I like that. And also, from what you've been saying about like financial advisors, I've been speaking to a lot of young advisors, and they also don't have like that worry about having. And they see them as mentors, like the older advisors. And also they kind of know at some point they're probably going to inherit those clients. So I think it's quite a good give and take relationship between that older advisor and younger advisors. So, yeah.
Definitely. I find that too. But I don't know, maybe I'm just cynical, Kim, but I was just coming at it from the other way. But I have to say as well, you know, talking about how my brain works, I do remember writing an email to a contact and kind of all this maybe stream of consciousness coming out. And the guy turned around and said to me, I can see right inside your brain now. And it kind of just, you just reminded me of that. So, one of those sort of lucky stories.
Mamadou, what did you cover in October that stood out for you, whether it was in the mag or online?
On Impact Platform.
Mm-hmm.
That was a story that kind of like stood out for me. The platform went through kind of like, kind of like a mass resignation.
Mm-hmm.
The managers, left the platform in groups, you know.
Okay.
And that was an exclusive story for Money Marketing, you know, we did, last month, you know, so.
And do we know why they're leaving in droves?
That was the $1 million question, yeah. I contacted, the firm to try to find out why they lived, but it said this was just normal, yeah. But for the chief executive to leave with the senior managers, it means that there was something wrong, yeah. But there was no explanation from the firm, you know, confirming why they left, you know.
Oh, you have to do some investigative, like, undercover stuff there to find out the tea.
Well, thanks for that. Yeah. That's something, I should be working on.
So something to look forward to in the future, probably.
Yeah.
Probably not for Embark. They don't want all their dirty laundry to be out there, but it'll be interesting to read.
That was a very good story, I think. You know, we can't.
Yeah, I know. It was a really great story. And was there anything else that stood out for you?
With all this political crisis going on, you know, I think that kind of like stood out. I did my leader advisors dealing with clients, you know.
Mm.
And it's took kind of like four versions, you know, because things just kept happening, you know. I did it before Kwasi Kwarteng was sacked.
Yeah.
And then when he was sacked, I did a second draft. And I filed a second draft. And after the second draft,
trust was gone.
Exactly. His trust was gone. So Mike was like, you have to change it again. So yeah, so that was very hard to kind of.
It's been a difficult. People need to take a moment of silence for all journalists, I think, because anything that you have drafted and written in the space of a day can change like crazy. So
I feel sorry for all the national newspaper journalists who had to fast 9 p.m. when Boris Johnson announced he was pulling out of the race.
I can't even relate. Like, I know that we used to be a weekly, so I can only imagine what that would have been like if we were still doing. Obviously we're doing a lot of online content as well, but I think it's a simpler process when you don't have to like send it to the printers and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was shambles. I mean, that was shambles. And thank God, you know, things have come back to normal, you know. So, I mean...
Don't speak too soon.
Touch wood. But yeah, but
we're currently recording this on the 28th, so who knows what might happen by the time that this drops at the beginning of the month.
Touch wood. Hopefully,
yeah,
it's gonna work out fine. Yeah.
And Lois, you've been obviously out there being our dubbed you now?
Socialite. Money marketing socialite.
Yeah, the money marketing socialite. So,
secretary.
Yeah, social secretary. Yeah.
That's
both
also
in the
role.
Team and also outside. You know, you're kind of the face. So, how is your what stood out for you in October?
Yeah, I've had a really fun month. I've actually been staying at my cousin's house in the countryside for the past week. And one of my podcast interviews was interrupted when a herd of cows escaped into their garden. So
yeah, definitely check out Lois's Twitter to see that very funny video.
Country life. Probably two stories stood out for me in October. I'm afraid neither of them are exclusive, but they're both about the Financial Conduct Authority. So advisors will be happy.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is a probe that they've launched into big tech coming into financial services. So big tech companies like Amazon, Google, Microsoft, those sort of really huge companies. Because Amazon, I think it was, fairly recently, sort of mid-October, announced that they were launching a home insurance comparison service in Britain. And that sort of some experts who I spoke to, including Ian McKenna, who I speak to quite a lot, believe that that should be a wake-up call to existing incumbent life and pensions companies, because it sort of takes Amazon a step closer to financial services. And so I wrote a longer piece on that, because then a few days later or a week later, the FCA brought out this probe into big tech and how it could affect financial services. You know, it could bring in new innovative offers and provide some healthy competition to the incumbents. But at the same time, obviously, one thing these big tech providers are really good at is stealing market share. So if they do that and sort of get the monopoly on certain services, that could stifle competition. So the FCA is looking at this. It's not a consultation yet, it's just a discussion paper. But I thought that was really interesting to see what happens there. It's been a sort of a thing on the horizon for quite a few years now. You know, it's talked about every so often whether Amazon will take over financial services. I think most of the people I've spoken to are saying they probably wouldn't offer advice, so there's not like a threat to actual financial advisors. What they would do is the more what the sort of life and pensions providers do, so providing products and things. So that was quite an interesting one. The other FCA, and this is a consultation, they've launched to crack down on greenwashing. So obviously it's spoken about a lot. ESG is out there. Loads, you know, it's talked about loads. But how much do people really know what it is? I think when, certainly for me, before I started writing about it a lot, if you said ESG, I would immediately think climate change issues. But there's a lot more to it than that. Obviously, there's the S and the G as well. But the other issue is that a lot of these terms, when you're talking about investing, so ESG, responsible, impact, ethical, there's all these terms floating around and no actual definition for what they are when they relate to funds. So what the FCA is doing is consulting on terms that they want to put to these investments so that fund managers can't label a fund sustainable unless it fits the criteria that the FCA is laying out. So it's got three categories at the moment. Obviously, it's sort of up in the air. I think the consultation is open to the end of January, and the FCA is going to publish final rules sometime in the first half next year. So yeah, we're looking out for that. But it's an interesting one, and it's definitely something that's needed. Even if ESG investing maybe isn't top of mind for everyone during the cost of living crisis, it's definitely something that's a longer term important issue. So I think those are the two main stories that stood out for me in October that I've
read. Yeah. No, I mean, that sounds like a lot. will this, with the greenwashing thing, would this be like next year's Consumer Duty? Where people,
I don't know. I think Consumer Duty is next year's Consumer Duty.
I know, but it feels like there's been this whole like get prepared for Consumer Duty, but yeah, I'm saying definitely. In terms of like if they do come out with rules and what you need to put in place to prevent greenwashing, will it be get prepared for, like, will that be something advisors are having to look at?
So yeah, it's it sort of fits with the Consumer Duty as well, because it fits with this whole thing of, you know, making sure that clients understand the advice that's being given and understand what advisors are saying to them. And so if an advisor just says to a client, do you want ESG considered, that's not necessarily the best way to ask them. They haven't necessarily sort of understood what you're asking them. So I think this will really help with defining exactly what it is that clients are asking for. Also, I don't know if we can bug our responsible investing event that's taking place probably next February.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, let's bug it.
So we're launching a new series called MM Talks. It's a series of sort of smaller conference style events. And the first one is going to be on responsible investing. Currently, it's down for the 28th of February in central London. So definitely something for advisors to look at when we say more about that.
Well, it's something that will help clear some stuff out for them if they're still in confusion about anything. So
exactly,
definitely look out for that registration link at some point. And Mike, what stood out for you in October?
For me, I think what stood out in October was just probably the political stuff. But it was just interesting. So I just sort of did a story this morning about Guy Opperman. He's now gone back to DWP, but it's not clarified whether he's sort of pensions minister yet. It might be clarified on this call, but you know, he was, you know, in the summer, just to take him as a kind of microcosm. So in June, he sort of succeeded Steve Webb as the longest running Pensions minister in mid-June. He stepped down on the 7th of July. You know, he was one of the more than 50 MPs who resigned from Boris's cabinet.
During mass exodus.
Then he was literally reappointed on the 8th of July, the next day, again, as pensions minister. Then Liz Truss, came in at the beginning of September. He fell by the wayside, and now he's sort of back in again. So it's just really, you know, it's really interesting, dramatic.
It's giving very hokey pokey, like in, out, in, out.
It's really actually hard to follow what's going on. And then just on this call, just before this call, I've noticed that the person who was appointed pensions minister, Alex Berg, I don't think I'm pronouncing his name properly, wait a sec. Alex Burkhart, he's now been moved to the, I think, the cabinet. So he might be cabinet secretary now. So I've got to do maybe a short story after this on that. Yeah, so now he's parliamentary undersecretary of state for the cabinet office. So that's quite interesting. So it's all very still fluid. And it's been very, very interesting covering it.
It's so unsettling, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's not very good for sort of consistency of regulation.
I used to think I enjoyed chaos, but it turns out I actually don't.
And I guess the big, and you know, you think that Rishi Sunak only became Prime Minister on Tuesday.
Yeah.
As of this recording. And then, you know, Jeremy Hunt was reappointed Chancellor Exchequer. We've got a new Chief Secretary of the Treasury, John Glenn.
The Home Secretary came back.
A new Mel Strides, who JB interviewed last year, resigned as chair of the Treasury Select Committee, and now he's the new Permanent Secretary for Work and Pensions. So Opperman's come in under him to work under Mel Strides in Mel Strides' department, but we don't exactly know what he'll be doing. And then the fiscal medium-term fiscal statement, which is meant to happen next Monday 31st mm-hmm. of October, with the OBR mm-hmm. forecast has been moved to Thursday the 17th of November. So it's all,
you know, that will be something recovering in the next end of month podcast.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's called the autumn statement, right?
Yes, it is.
Which is good, because I think fiscal sounds like a really dirty word, so I'm glad.
So now we've got a tag, and because we were debating, what will we call it? Will we call it the budget 2022, but the fiscal meeting for fiscal statement? So now we've got autumn statement, I think 2022, that'll be the tag and landing page.
Yeah, so, it helps us with our SEO.
And they did it just to help us with that SEO, as you said. That's why they moved the date, to make our lives easier. But on going back to Momadou's point, it was actually really interesting, because I would have been at Money Marketing 5 years in December, mm-hmm. and I've never had so much of the magazine rewritten because of events in politics.
Mm.
So it's really interesting. So I think Paul Lewis had to have he did a column on Trustonomics, and he had it rewritten 3 times, which is really interesting. And initially in my MM view, I didn't mention Rishi Sunak had just become Prime Minister. On Tuesday, which happened to be our press day, but then we mentioned it in the diary. So to be consistent, we mentioned him, put it in.
Mm.
So it was all kind of really...
It's even little things, like I think we had a sponsored podcast where they mentioned interest rates, and by the time I had kind of edited it and was ready to publish, we had to change it because those interest rates had changed. In a very short space of time. So all these things are just like fluctuating, and it's really hard to cut out a little segment of someone saying something. I know like rewriting is also quite a lot, but trying to cut out a little section when you're editing a voice recording is it's a lot as well.
Well, what can we say now that Kim has to cut out?
Oh man. quote something about like where inflation will be. I don't know.
Oh, I have no idea. So no chance.
It'll be interesting when we're doing our end of year podcast to see how this year has finally wrapped up. But even then, we'll be recording it a couple of weeks before the end of the year. So who knows what could happen between the time of us recording it and us actually putting it out.
Nightmare.
It really is. There's no stability. All I want is stability. Is there anything else, Mike?
I guess just for the, well, at least the October mag, I did the cover on the data and can we improve data in financial services? Will the opportunity be seized? I used the kind of opportunity, the fact that we had a new prime minister, now former prime minister.
We have a new prime minister.
And a new king, exactly. Maybe we'll have like acting prime minister at some point or whatever, but to riff off Lois's acting editor thing. But I just use that as an opportunity to say that although there is a crisis, when there isn't a crisis, there also is an opportunity. And sometimes if people do have their back up against the wall and there is no safety net, whether it would be politicians or businesses or organizations, even normal everyday people, it can actually really give you the motor, you know, that you need to kind of get going and sort out some long-standing issues or problems that maybe for whatever reasons you've been avoiding or not facing or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that was the kind of, like with the FCA Consumer Duty and pensions dashboard being two big projects, which if they do come to light, hold a lot of promise. But if they don't, that'd be a shame. So I also did that for the October issue.
You also had a really interesting weekend essay that this will go out, it will have been published, comparing politics to, or like asking what politicians can learn from Strictly Come Dancing, which I just want to know, how did you think of that? Was it just because you've recently been watching it and you thought, this is a fair voting system, I want this voting system?
It came to me, I don't know, I always love I love poetry and I love images, mm-hmm. and I think that like metaphors, you have a particular image in a poem which holds it together,
mm-hmm.
It's like the spine of the poem, and I think if you apply that to any piece you're writing,
mm-hmm.
It kind of gives focus to the piece. And I came up with Strictly Come Dancing because I thought it's popular There's a democratic element to it. Mm-hmm. And I just riffed on it. So when I need them, they do emerge.
Oh, wow.
Thankfully.
And you did use a really good, I called it a bar at the end, which I need
thank
to
you.
Get
yeah,
the proper quote. What did you say? Sorry. I'm just looking for it. You need partners to achieve results. You know, like in Circly, you have a really good partner. They teach you and you achieve those results. And you said that politicians also need to learn to like work with their partners, work with their teams.
Yeah. I mean, it's like us, right? We're a team. I mean, it's you know, if we all started behaving, you know, like that lot were, say, over the past 6 weeks in September, there would be no funny marketing, right? It would just
acting editor, like however many actings they would be.
Yeah. So that was the point. But I enjoyed writing it. It was cathartic. For me, and I think I made my point, and so that's that. And hopefully, we'll have some stability now.
Yeah, hopefully. So looking on to the November issue, so let's start with Momadou. Is there anything that you have written in the November issue that you want to highlight or give us a little sneak peek into?
Yes, I did. And that was advices, sharing their life experience. You know, I mean, given what is happening, I mean, now, I mean, with all this economic crisis, you know,
mm-hmm.
a client or investor, I mean, you might be tempted to kind of like cut your losses, you know, because when you check, I mean, things are just, I mean, kind of like dropping down, you know. So, yeah, the piece was, I mean, based on Emmanuel Asuko's keynote address at the MMI London.
Yes.
Was, yeah, advising, you know, advisors to share their lived experience. And then let's face it, I mean, because of, I mean, the experiences of all these advisors, I mean, and they've seen almost all the stuff happen, you know, kind of like financial crisis, kind of like clients going through divorces, you know, I mean, clients having experiences, you know, so the piece was basically saying that, I mean, if there is any moment, I mean, for advisors to kind of like share their worth, I think it's now. I mean, advisors, so that they can share their personal experience with their clients. So kind of like demystify the whole process, you know? You know, because I mean, some people think, I mean, the job of advisors is to make them rich, you know? So, and the piece was just saying kind of like, I mean, if you share your own personal, you know, experience, you know, your own financial, I mean, kind of like status, you know, maybe, I mean, that might help the client.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, though, because if you're able to relate to someone, you become more comfortable with them and more trusting of them. And a lot of being an advisor is developing those relationships. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Indeed. And then when clients, you know, have problems, I mean, just imagine if you have, and then when problem comes, I mean, they normally comes in twos or more, you know, I mean, kind of like, you know, so, but if the client is going through a divorce, which is kind of like painful, kind of like very hard for them, you know, and then maybe there's a financial crisis. So it's like too much, you know, so kind of like having that conversation with the clients, you know, make them feel at ease that this will pass, you know, I mean, because, I mean, as part of their own rejection, you know, there's always that, I mean, room for, I mean, times like this, you know, when things will dip, you know. You know, that's where they share that things will get better, you know, after. So yeah, so that was the focus on the, I mean, of the piece, you know, pretty much.
I always do wonder when advisors, because they do deal with such like emotional situations sometimes, I do wonder if they have that training and capability, you know, like it's almost like they're not exactly counselors, but some of the things that they're dealing with is, I wonder if they would need that extra layer of training to be able to have difficult and complicated conversations, because, you know, like anyone who works in like the medical profession, for example, they have those trainings as well, to be able to have those, like, let's sit down and have this conversation. So I don't know if it's something
that sounds like a very good idea, something worth, you know, checking with the advice.
I have talked to some and they've said that it's something that they've had to learn along the way. But I don't know if it would be something that would be helpful. I think I talked to one person recently and they told me that Quilter like provides those kind of more mental health kind of sessions when it comes to these conversations, which I think is a really interesting angle. But yeah. Amanda, could you tell us about what you'll be covering in the November issue or give us a little sneak peek?
Right, I won't give too much away, Kim, because I do have a tendency to kind of rattle off things and spoil it. But I'm looking at whether advisors have a responsibility to fill the advice gap. It is debatable whether it exists. Some people think it does, some doesn't. I'm kind of not really looking at that too much. I'm just looking at, you know, do advisors have a responsibility to do more for people that maybe, you know, currently not seeking advice for whatever reason, if it's affordability, perceptions that they don't need it or whatever, or, you know, does it need some intervention from the government or providers or whatever. So that's one area I'm looking at. Another area I'm looking at is an innovative approach to training. I'm looking at various things with this, kind of bringing different areas together. One of them is SJP's virtual reality training, because they're doing quite a bit in terms of vulnerable clients. I do the InFocus vulnerable client slot money marketing quite regularly, so it is an area that I'm genuinely interested in anyway, but I've been doing a bit of work on. So I'm looking at that. I'm also looking at Next Gen Planners Scholarship in conjunction with the Chartered Institute for Securities Investment. That's an interesting one for me, because I've spoken about before that I've got a council estate background. It's something, you know, that I kind of like just sort of say, because diversity and inclusion is quite an important thing to me. You know, I went to school with people that, you know, probably you wouldn't say they had the greatest chances in life, but, you know, I've been some doctors and whatever that kind of, you know, managed to get somewhere for education. So the idea of the scholarship is that, you know, it's paid for and whatever. I think that's a really important incentive, because when I was looking at a career choice, it was kind of a concern about, you know, what could I do that I could earn money in quickly, because I was looking at law, but the whole idea of doing articles, which is unpaid, kind of put me off a bit. So long-winded way of saying, you know, that this is sort of helping people into the profession where money is probably a barrier. And that's kind of it, really. That's all I probably really have to contribute today.
No, that's great. I look forward to hearing more about them, reading them myself. Again, I do love the way you weave a story together, because it's always like anecdotal and personal. So I encourage anyone listening to also look into whether it's online or getting the actual physical copy, because the physical copies are beautiful as well. So make sure to subscribe. That's a plug. That's the first plug in this podcast. And Lois, what about you? What have you got coming up in November?
So
apart from being, you know, the social girl,
trying to do slightly less going out in November, or not. I have been working on the cover feature, and it's all about what the financial advice client of the future will look like. So I'm not going to reveal too much, but I think traditionally, certainly before I joined money marketing, what I considered a financial advice client was generally a middle-aged man with millions of pounds wanting to turn into multi-millions or billions, which obviously still is the case for a lot of clients. But some research done by AdvisorStream and Dow Jones recently found that actually it's the younger generations that are the ones who say they would value financial advice more. So millennials and whatever the next generation is,
Gen Z.
So that's
maybe Gen Alpha.
I don't know if Gen Alpha needs financial advice. Yeah,
education. But they're probably streaming for hours on Twitch and making millions.
Yeah,
so true. They don't want to.
My son is costing me a fortune, you know. I mean, kind of like buying all those Roblox online and kind of stuff, you know.
Tell him to get on Twitch and start making money online.
Well, that's the plan. That's the plan.
Start paying your way, son. There's exactly. So many opportunities now. Back in my day, throw that at him.
Well, I mean, I wish we'd had this conversation before I'd written the feature. Maybe I could have woven it in, whatever the word is. I've lost words.
It's all right. It's near the end of the month. We're all exhausted.
But it's been a really interesting cover feature to work on. I've also been getting really into like dystopian futuristic films and books recently. So, I mean, maybe the future won't even exist because it will all be killed by AI robots.
I'm so glad that you have jumped on board to where I've been since like the beginning of this year. I just keep remembering all the dystopian stuff I was obsessed with when I was a young adult, reading like The Hunger Games and all that stuff, just thinking like, oh, this fancy future, but it's becoming more and more like, maybe it's gonna happen.
Yeah, maybe it already happened. So if that happens, then my feature will be rendered null, but
everything will.
You should read it anyway. But yeah, so that's what I have. Oh, I also wrote a or have been working on a smaller feature about why companies call their companies the names that they give them. That was really badly explained, but you get the picture.
Well, like how companies come up with their
names. Companies come up with their names. There you go. Yes, that's
I just
said.
I always do wonder when it comes to that, and also logos and everything. You know, so much money and time goes into it, but is it just one person going, I think this is a really nice word?
Like, yeah, it's catchy. Sometimes sometimes that is the case. Other times there's more of a sort of
story behind it.
Intricate story behind it. So yeah, check that out in the November magazine as well. It's interesting.
Cool.
Before we forget, I have to mention our esteemed colleague, Jean-Baptiste.
Oh, yes, of course.
I was going to mention him when we were talking about empathy. I was going to mention him and say, I think, was it last podcast we found out he doesn't have empathy? So
yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't. He is fully okay. He's okay with that.
Yeah.
Isn't that joking?
I don't know.
He mentioned a few things that he is proud of. Headline. Well, he didn't use the word proud, but he should be proud of them.
He would never use the word proud.
Yeah. One was his interview with, she was outgoing at the time he wrote it, but now she has gone chief executive and chief ombudsman of the Financial Ombudsman Service, Norsica Delphus. Mm-hmm. He wrote that for the November magazine, Money Marketing Meets. Was a really good piece. Also that was interesting because when we were writing that, there were some changes there, so we had to write in such a way that there wouldn't be confusion, because she would have left. So that was also affected by timeliness, which was interesting because that also was like the politics, but just for a different reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also wrote a couple of pieces, news pieces for the website based on research. What was that? Investors are not as enthusiastic about ESG as they were last year. Research by the Association of Investment Companies found that 58% are not convinced by ESG claims from asset managers, compared to 48% last year. So that was interesting. And then there was also a report that by Next Wealth that found that advised client assets invested in sustainable funds and portfolios rose from 18% to 22% between April and August 2022. That's going to be giving a slightly different picture. But he was saying that might suggest that advisor clients are more likely to stay committed to ESG investments and not divesting, at least according to Next Wealth's figures.
Hopefully.
And perhaps advisors are playing a role there versus DIY clients who move in and out of investments depending on market noise.
Yeah.
Those were the things that he wanted to discuss today.
I'm guessing the DIY guys don't have that long-term vision, whereas maybe advisors will have that, like, in the long run, this will be beneficial kind of thing.
Yeah. That's interesting. And
what about yourself? What do you have coming up in November? Do you have anything apart from obviously overseeing the team and everything?
No, I do not. I believe I did my fill for October with the cover. I was just looking after everyone else's great content, and there's loads of great stuff in there, guys. Well done again. And I think even with all the political noise, we managed to finish it about 10:30 on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Which I think might have been a record. So thanks to the great team. And it just shows, you know, get stuff in early. So if changes do happen, you have the kind of bandwidth to change them, I guess.
Well, I wrote that company names feature that I mentioned in August. So that was pretty early for the November issue.
Yes, yes. that's true. But yeah, well done everyone. Great stuff, and please do keep it up.
Yeah. So is there anything else that JB had wanted to mention, maybe for the November issue, since he's not here?
For the November issue, no, I don't think so.
He would have just ended by saying read it anyway. Just go and pick up the magazine and read everything that we have to offer.
The main thing really was his money marketing meets with Niels Kadelphus.
So, yeah.
Which is really worth reading. So please, everyone, do go and read it.
Yeah. Well, once again, I'm going to plug the actual physical copy of the magazine. So please do go to the website and subscribe so that you can see how amazing these magazines that the team works so hard on come out. And also go online and see all the online content that we come out with. And listen to the podcast and everything. But thank you guys for joining me again. And I look forward to whatever might happen in November that we'll be talking about. I'm excited to see what we'll be covering in in November, because I genuinely didn't think any of the stuff that happened in October would happen. That's probably why my mind is all over the place. But thanks guys for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye.